Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher with the National Coalition of Labor, and sitting with me today is my dear old buddy, old pal, Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council.
Good morning, Ed.
What's happening, Phil? Happy Sunday.
What a nice intro. Happy Sunday to you, too.
Thank you, old buddy, old pal. I meant it.
Life
I meant
partner.
Every word of it.
Life partner.
Life partner?
Mm-hmm.
Only on Sundays.
Soulmate.
For a couple hours. That's enough. I'm flattered, but just you're making it weird, man.
Sorry.
How's your week?
Week was good. Little bit of a thaw out, which was nice, right?
Yeah.
Last week was brutal. You wouldn't have known because
I was in Florida.
Yeah.
For
it feels
some
like that was a way
business.
For you to just rub it in that you were in Florida by introducing that question.
It was like 55 degrees there. It wasn't super warm.
Okay.
I didn't complain.
Yeah.
I was out on the beach wearing a hoodie, just you know, to say that
the
I
only
didn't.
Guy.
Nobody was out.
Yes.
Yeah. But saw a lot of Florida things. I mean, where you go to. You know, you're walking down the street in Fort Lauderdale, and there's like a bartender coming over the bar, like fighting with somebody,
okay.
And you can't tell who's drunker, the patron or the bartender at 3 in the afternoon. Florida's always an interesting place.
Yes.
Yeah, it was. I was happy to come home.
I like that part of Florida, though.
Yeah.
I like the ocean side.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm more of a Gulf side
you're
person.
You're a Gulf person, okay.
I am a Gulf side person.
Gulf of America?
It's the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, okay.
I'm sticking with that one.
Okay.
But yeah, we were down there for, the International Union of Operating Engineers had some meetings and, leaders from all over the country were there. And it was great because I heard from folks all over the country who listened to this show.
Whoa.
And who listened to the podcast. So I was like, are there any states that I've been especially hard on in the last little while? I mean, and I think the answer, thankfully, is no. I mean, I used to take a lot of swipes at Philadelphia and they're terrible sports fans, but I've softened up a little bit on that.
They're used to it.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
It's, they get plenty of
we
that.
We only go after the states that have rolled back their child labor laws.
Exactly.
Yes. So they're kind of deserving of it, too.
But yeah, we've got listeners everywhere. And to be honest, I had some conversation with some folks who are with locals in Minnesota, namely Minneapolis,
okay.
About just kind of what's going on up there.
Yes.
And what it's been like. And I heard a story from one of them who he had told me that he had a member who was about almost a 20-year member who had come to the United States as a Somalian refugee and, you know, had a family and eventually started the immigration process to become a citizen. And it's a long process.
Do you know what he
when
did?
you're a refugee. I mean, for whatever reason, it seems like it takes longer to become a citizen if you start off with refugee status. But after almost 20 years, he didn't have his full citizenship.
Wow.
But he had kids and a family, and he's...
What did he do for work?
Oh, he was an operator.
Okay.
A heavy equipment operator.
Heavy equipment. Okay, got it.
But he got rounded up. And him and his family are in Texas. And it's like your kids were born here.
Yeah.
Like you were, you know, it's just one day your refugee status was gone. And so he said, people are just freaking out because there are folks who have done everything the right way.
Yeah.
And they're just
was his
still,
wife from here?
Still getting
or was
round
she
up.
Also,
I think she was also a refugee.
Okay. But the kids are born here.
Yeah. But the kids are, they're at a camp in Texas right now. And so I had told him, and I made some remarks to everyone. If you have members that are being detained or anything like that for the wrong reasons. You know, the Coalition of Labor has legal support, and
yes.
One of those services is immigration.
Yes.
We have immigration attorneys who I've got to think are the most overworked people right now.
They're earning every penny they get right now.
Yeah, but it's important because, I mean, think about it. If you knew somebody that is here illegally, there's no questions about the way that they're here, and they just get, you know, disappeared one day. Well, what do you do?
What do you do? Right. Yeah,
so
I know. I know that.
It's crazy that we have to think about this stuff.
The Illinois AFL CIO has been doing seminars about know your rights
right.
When it comes to immigration. And yeah, there's a lot of people don't know.
We've had a few immigration attorneys on the show over the past couple of years, and
yeah.
It's always really interesting. And one of the things that they do for coalition members is, you know, like a free phone consultation to just talk about the issue. And then they, you know, do discounts on their rates and all that kind of stuff. But I would imagine it's got to be really helpful to just be able to talk to those folks. Because when they come on the show and we ask just questions, I mean, I always learn so much just listening to that. And it kind of breaks my heart to see the way that some people's rights are just trampled.
Right.
You know, they get lumped in like undocumented, illegal, legal, people going through the process. they're just kind of getting all lumped in and rounded up together.
Yeah. What the people of Minneapolis have gone through has been obviously traumatic and a travesty.
Yeah.
But got to give them a pat on the back for their resilience and standing up for themselves and, you know, basically changing policy. I mean, they
got Bovino early retired.
They were the impetus for that. Yeah. So, man, and if you look I have a newfound respect for Minnesotans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at actually what happened, and this is something I thought about this past week that I thought it was interesting. They say history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, mm-hmm. right? They had the first woman, Renee Good, mm-hmm. was killed in her car, and the reaction of Minnesota was to call for a one-day general strike. You know, no work, no school, no shopping. And on the day that they called that general strike, another person gets killed.
Yeah.
So I'm like, on the day of a general strike, the cops killed somebody in the streets. I was like, this is sounding like echoes from the early 20th century with
Pinkertons.
You know, things within the labor movement.
Yeah.
But, you know, with some of the things that have gone on, you just see folks across the country saying, like, enough's enough. We got to at least say something. We have to, you know, voice our opposition to the tactics that are being used. And it worked. I mean, they got Bovino out of there.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
And by cops, you meant Border Patrol, not our.
Let's not call them cops.
Yes, not our hardworking law enforcement officers.
Yeah.
Yes.
These ICE agents are not cops.
No.
Half of them aren't trained and. I don't know, but yeah, it seems like the temperature has come down a little bit.
Yeah.
They're starting to tap the brakes on some of this stuff. But anyway, enough on that.
No.
We've got to take a quick break.
Sure.
But we've got a really interesting show coming up today. And when we come back from the break, we want to talk about sports. There's a number of things going on with sports right now. You know, top of mind is the Bears, and we'll dig into that a little bit. But some other things too. So stay with us, and we will be back right after this break with more Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Ed Maher here with Phil Davidson, and we are going to get into a little bit about the Bears.
Yes.
Now, if you're wondering what's going on with the Bears, are they going to Illinois? Are they going to Indiana? Like everyone else, we don't know. And I think this, whatever decision is ultimately made, we were talking about this off the air, I think it's going to happen, you know, like 10 minutes before whatever deadline is set.
Right. Yeah. You know, let's not forget that when the White Sox were threatening their move to, was it Tennessee?
Florida,
yeah. Right. They literally stopped the legislative clock
right.
in Springfield.
They had to get a decision by like midnight,
yeah.
And so it didn't happen. So they like covered up the clocks.
Yeah, they stopped time and then passed it, you know, 5 minutes after like the midnight deadline. But
some of that creative Illinois legislating,
exactly.
I like to call it.
Yes.
Well, hopefully we don't have to deal with that with the Bears. But I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, stranger things have happened. But there's just been a ton of posturing. You know, it was the city versus Arlington Heights. And
right.
That was Arlington Heights versus Indiana. And everyone's like, wait a second, Indiana?
Indiana's in the mix now.
But Indiana is pushing pretty hard here.
They are.
Their Senate, the Indiana Senate passed a bill this past week, you know, that dealt with incentives for the stadium. I think they would fully pay, they're offering to fully pay for a stadium. But something that was interesting in that bill that passed the Senate already was a ban on project labor agreements. Yeah, that's right. So what does that mean? I mean, this bill is basically just to put together a package of incentives for the team to make them want to come to Indiana. So why do you have to take away project labor agreements? And basically what a project labor agreement is on a large multi-billion dollar project, like a highway or university or a big hospital or whatever, a stadium. This is an agreement between the customer and all the unions that are involved that basically says, you can't strike at any point on this project. And in exchange for that, we're going to use union labor. We're going to have conferences to make sure that everybody's work is what they think it's going to be. Like one trade's not doing the other trade's work. You know, we're all going to communicate. We're going to come up with resolution processes, all this kind of stuff.
Workers will be paid prevailing wage scale. Yes.
Yeah. And in exchange for that, like, everything is going to be built quickly on a schedule, and there will be predictability. The thing will open when it's supposed to open.
There's labor peace.
Yeah. And these agreements are usually not, like, mandatory. On a lot of big projects, we see them here in Illinois all the time, and the people who use them say, like, yeah, this was good. This was a good thing for everyone. There are safety protocols in place. Like, it was a safe job. It was done on time. It was done on budget. It was done efficiently.
You know, you have the best trained workforce.
Yes. For sure. So it can be a tool.
There's no people coming in from out of town who are going to take advantage of this money and then spend their money back in their home states. Yeah,
exactly. So it can be a good option.
Yes.
Some people choose to use them. Sometimes they don't. But what Indiana did that really got everybody upset this week was their incentive bill banned it.
Yeah, they inserted language that said no PLAs on this job.
Yeah, which, you know, they're trying to compete with Illinois to make, to say, like, Indiana's a better option and we're going to do better than Illinois here, you know, do better than all these things Illinois is doing. And of course, they have to throw in, and we're going to take a pound of flesh from our workers. We're not going to have any sort of requirements. We're going to ban any requirements that would be helpful toward our own workforce.
Yes.
And I feel like that's just really, really antiquated, especially in Northwest Indiana, which really the political makeup in Northwest Indiana is closer to that of Chicago than it is
Absolutely.
To Indianapolis.
Not to mention, I mean, thousands of tradespeople live in that part of the state.
Absolutely. I mean, they have refineries, you know, they have universities, all that kind of stuff, but they have a really powerful union trades movement in Northwest Indiana. So all these folks, as you can imagine, were really upset to see this. And the county chairman of the Republican parties of Lake County, Porter County, and LaPorte County, you know, the biggest counties that they're in Northwest Indiana.
Surrounding,
They were all just like, we got to get this fixed.
Pump
we have to
breaks.
Get this taken care of.
Yes. This isn't a D versus R issue. This is even R saying, like, no.
Bad idea. So hopefully before it gets into the House, before it passes the House, they're going to clean up this language. And they seem to say that they will be able to do that. But the fact that it made it through the Senate and nobody said boo and nobody noticed that it was in there, they said it was something to do with like a major or a minor league soccer stadium, and they just like copied and pasted.
Yeah, they
the
snuck
old bill.
It in there. Yeah, but also there was discussions prior to the bill passing, and it was that language was left in the bill. So the sponsors of it seemingly want to make sure it was in there.
Yeah,
but yeah, I agree. It'll get resolved, and then you look at whatever's been proposed by the Bears for their stadium here in Arlington Heights. 100% union, everything.
Right. Yeah, they had PLA provisions there. It's
top to bottom.
Yeah, it's just weird that Indiana, they seem to always at least take a chance. You can't blame a guy for trying kind of thing.
I know. But this, I mean, and this kind of illustrates the leverage that the Bears have in this situation where, again, I understand the arguments that, look, the state is running at a deficit right now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, affordability is a crisis in every part of America right now, as much as the president doesn't want to acknowledge it, but it is. People are struggling, and do you want to use taxpayer dollars to support a franchise of the Bears that are worth, we'll say, at minimum $6 billion?
Right.
However, what the Bears are looking at is, I have other states and offering to build our stadium for free.
Right.
You know, it's like, I mean, as much as I want the Bears to do the right thing, build here, you know, build everything on their own, which they said they would build their stadium in Illinois with their own dollars. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it would require some state money for the surrounding infrastructure. But,
what
are you supposed to do? Like, I mean, every city wants an NFL franchise. It's the most sure bet that you can have in sports and in all of entertainment, really, you know?
But when they say, hey, in Illinois, we're going to build this stadium out in Arlington Heights, we're looking for help with infrastructure, we're looking for some tax help, but we'll build the stadium, we'll pay for it, that's no problem. Then Indiana shows up on the scene and says, we'll pay for your stadium.
Right.
I mean, then the Bears look back at Illinois and
I know. It makes the decision a lot more difficult for
them.
It
just seems like kind of a game. And this is happening now with the Bears stadium, but we see this all the time with big manufacturing facilities or companies that are trying to move their headquarters to another state.
All the time.
And there's like this race
it's
to
leverage.
The bottom where hopefully you want to think that at some point policymakers look at it and say, what's the break-even point?
Yes.
Like, at what point are we giving up the store so much that it's not worth having it here, that it's more harmful to our taxpayers? And that's what I always think of when it comes to, you know, these sports teams and stuff. And I'm watching this deal get sweeter and sweeter for the Bears, because if Indiana is saying, we'll pay for your stadium, Illinois is going to have to sweeten up its deal.
Of course. Arlington Heights is going to have to sweeten. You need to have a level playing field. It's kind of like what they were proposing at one point. I don't think it ever went anywhere with the minimum corporate income tax that all the G8 countries were discussing about. You can't have some countries saying, okay, your minimum corporate income tax is going to be 4% and then everyone else is going to be 10%. It's like, yeah, they're going to go to the countries like Ireland and wherever else where the income tax rate is so much lower. Excuse me. So you need the same thing for states here of like, look, you can't undercut what we're offering. There's got to be some sort of pact, but obviously that'll never happen. But that's what teams are up against of, okay, well, we can go somewhere else and they're going to offer us a lot of money.
Yeah. And that's what workers are up against.
We're in the business of making money. So, I mean, it's...
And in Indiana, what are they doing? What's the one of the first places they go to sweeten the pot is we're going to not really worry about taking care of our workers too
right,
good.
Right, right. That's
you'll have a cheap workforce. And I just think that that's an example of when all this stuff becomes a disservice to working people.
Because,
you know, the folks in Indiana, are they like, do we want to build a stadium? Do we want to have the Bears in Northwest Indiana? Absolutely. That sounds great. And then the state's like, well, we're going to take out some worker protections and we're going to ban some things that would protect workers. And, you know, you just have to say, like who are... Who are you guys?
Exactly.
Who are you looking out for here?
Right.
Because if you're willing to just sort of cast your own workforce, your own taxpayers, your own residents aside to try to bring in a stadium, like, you got to take a closer look at what you're doing.
Yeah,
so I got to take my hat off to all the union leaders that got crazy about this from the moment that it was spotted. And it sounds like they're going to get this turned around. So,
yeah.
I mean, we'll confirm that next week.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll have some more information within the next week.
But you're right. It is truly backwards. Like normally it would be the team saying we don't want a PLA, not
right.
the state to support its own residents and its own workers saying we don't want the PLA. It doesn't, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes till we got to take a break, but there was one other thing NFL related that Phil, you were talking about that I think is important to touch on.
I know this is just the seedy side that we never want to discuss with unions, and
but it's important.
It's important. There was a case, an assistant general counsel for the NFLPA,
the
NFL Players Association, the NFL Players Union. She's filed a suit for discrimination, and it's opening up. Discovery and, you know, kind of some of the dirty secrets and the wrongdoings of the NFLPA, and one of which exposed that the now former executive director who resigned earlier last year was using union funds to bring, entertain clients, take them to strip clubs in Atlanta and elsewhere. And it's just... That's the stuff that it casts a black eye on unions when, you know, it just feeds into a stereotype that, oh, that's what they're doing, their money, like they're doing backroom deals and they're partying with people's money. And I just want to be clear, like that doesn't happen.
It just doesn't.
That stuff doesn't exist. There's so many protections in place and got in
the financial oversight on unions is. If corporations had to deal with the reporting and the financial oversight that the government places on private sector unions, they would have, you know, triple the amount of attorneys that they have now, just because it is truly onerous. And I hate to see this stuff too, because every now and then you'll see like some union off somewhere in the country, they'll have a leader who, you know, take some money or whatever it is. And everyone's like, yeah, there you go, unions.
Exactly.
There are tens of thousands of unions around the country. And it's almost like seeing, you know, a business leader, like a corporation person doing something corrupt. And it's
yeah,
like, does that mean every corporation's corrupt?
No.
No, nobody makes that leap. But with unions, people make that leap.
Right.
So it's one bad apple thing. And, I don't know, whatever. If he's using union dollars at strip clubs, get him out of there.
Yeah,
he doesn't belong there.
Yeah, shame on him. I mean, I'm sure he was being paid very handsomely. It's like,
no question.
What are you doing?
Yeah. But yeah, it gives a black eye to all the folks that are out there trying to do the right thing. So,
agreed.
All right, well, we have to take a quick break, but we're going to be back with more Workers' Mike in just a couple of minutes right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Workers' Mike. More show to come. Sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people, just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health,
Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Ed Maher here with Phil Davidson. When I was out of town this week, like I was saying at the top of the hour, I bumped into a lot of people that listen to our show. And, you know, we'll often say on Sundays, like, you know, on Worker Wednesday, we discussed, and of course, that's a segment we do Wednesday night during John Hansen's Your Money Matters show. But I had a few people like, how do I hear Worker Wednesday? And what's Worker Wednesday? So it's cool that we have so many listeners who are just dying for more of us. And who can blame them, to be honest with you? But
yeah, it's not week, just Sundays, folks.
That's right.
Catch us out midweek.
We're putting our mark on Wednesdays, too, our mark. But
for Phil, now, who knows?
You did Worker Wednesday this week, and you did a segment on Job Corps.
Job Corps, which is something we've covered extensively on this show, because it's a program that provides a massive benefit to workers, to young adults who come from disadvantaged areas, who right. want to get into the trades, who need a little boost. And it's something that's been around since 1964 during the Lyndon Johnson administration. And 2 million people have come to the program over the 60 plus years it's been in existence. Last year, a word came down from the Department of Labor, which oversees the program. The Labor Secretary, Lori Chavez-Reimer, who's got her own issues right now.
Glug, glug, glug.
Yes. But she said that this program is not meeting all of its goals. We are going to defund it and basically cut the program. And that meant that there were 3,000-4,000 students across the country who are part of this program. And it is a residential program, too. Like, there's dorms at these campuses.
Right.
You live there. Everything's obviously provided for free through the funding. It's, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars going to this program. And so they cut it, and there was massive panic. Some of the job centers closed. There's the Paul Simon Job Center here in Chicago. They had to close. Then the courts got involved. There was a temporary stay. So they opened back up again. And now, obviously there was massive outrage and protests from both the labor movement, because Job Corps trains people for, you know, at the one in Chicago, there's a carpentry program, there's a bricklayer program, but it's not just trades. There's also a nursing program.
Culinary.
You learn all different kinds of skills.
Yeah.
And so everyone went to their members of Congress, they went to their mayors or their governors, said, we got to save this program. And it was a bipartisan effort. And lo and behold, in the appropriations bill for the Department of Labor, the funding was restored for Job Corps.
That's a beautiful thing.
So Job Corps is back now. I think the funding has been restored through 2027. Mm-hmm. They might, from my understanding, is they put in some protections that would make it difficult to cut funding in the future after that deadline. But it's a big win. We're very happy in you know, very fortunate to have this program at the Carpenters Union. We've got two great instructors who work at the Job Corps Center in Chicago. I want to give them a quick shout out, Anna Figueroa, and Nick Saucedo. And yeah, it's interesting to be good instructors teaching these young adults how to be a carpenter, how to learn these skills that are going to give you the tools you need to be, you know, to have a good career. Yeah, a good blue collar, middle class career. They're mentors to them.
Yeah.
You know, like, these are a lot of the students, they come from very difficult upbringings, and they need someone to kind of be that guiding force in their life. And that's what, you know, that's what both Nick and Anna do. And, you know, it takes a very special person to do that kind of work. And it's very cool that Anna herself came through the program. She was a student. And then
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she was a student, and then she became an instructor. So we love to talk about that. Great job to everyone. And yeah, a win, a happy ending to the story that these students can continue with this and learn to trade. And we have like a 50% placement rate of students who've come to the program. Like, they finish, they get into the trade, you get a direct entry into our apprenticeship program, you go have a career as a union carpenter. So
I think when people nationally talk about folks who are, you know, disadvantaged or live in like a really poor community where there's not a lot of opportunity, you hear people say, oh, you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, or, oh, you got to find your own opportunity. I mean, let's be honest here. If you lived, I didn't grow up in a neighborhood like that. So no. I try to put myself in their shoes. But everybody gets where they're going with a little bit of help from somebody. But what a project like Job Corps, a program like Job Corps does is it takes somebody who basically doesn't have an option, doesn't have a pathway into a job, let alone a career. And it does what unions are always trying to do, which is, we've got these awesome careers with healthcare, retirement, like where you can, you know, have a good middle class life, and we're creating a pathway for people who would otherwise never be able to get into this.
No, and have no exposure to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's a good story, and it's the way that we should be doing things, because when you take somebody from one of these communities that doesn't have an option, and you hold their hand and you bring them into Job Corps and you get them a career where all of a sudden they're out working every day. They're, you know, paying their taxes. They're earning a pension. They have health care and they have kids that they can now support. Like, you haven't changed a person's life only. You've changed the trajectory for a family.
Right. For a community.
It's a huge deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, to say that that's a waste of money, you're just once again cutting off a segment of the population. So I'm happy to hear that it got replaced.
I mean,
that's
you're talking about a tenth of a tenth of a tenth of a tenth of the federal budget to support
for sure.
this, you know, with all the money. You know, and then the whole idea of, oh, no, we need to cut back on foreign aid. But it's like, okay, well, here's a great domestic program that trains young people for, again, family sustaining careers, and we're not gonna do that anymore. And
well, nobody paid for me to blow. It's like, what?
Yeah, and I think Job Corps be the first to admit, of course there's problems. There's people who get into the program who, you know, are taking advantage of it. There's, you know,
then there's not 100% success rate.
There's not gonna 100% success rate. There's people, when you put them in dorms together, there's gonna be some volatility, and
there was volatility.
Exactly.
So that's anywhere.
Right. Like, you know, they're supposed to be sober living places, but do people, you know, get involved in extracurriculars they shouldn't be? Yeah,
sure.
Of course that's going to happen. But as a whole, it's a very worthwhile program.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
I mean, investing in American people, I think, and showing people pathways is something that's important. Unions,
yes.
I mean, we spend a ton of money doing this, and government programs are investing money into this. I think it's great news, so I'm happy to hear that it's back. So excellent reporting on that, Phil.
Yeah, you're welcome. Go Job Corps.
Right on. This week, there was a report, a real deep dive from the New York Times, or actually it was New York Times Magazine, where they were talking about federal unions and sort of what's happened to the federal workforce under the current Donald Trump administration.
Wasn't the headline the biggest union busting program in American history?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So basically, they're saying so much of what we've talked about on this show, and that's 300,000 federal workers are gone, no longer employed. You know, one of the largest agencies that impacted was the Department of Veteran Affairs.
Right.
But I think there are like 20 agencies that are impacted by 300,000 federal
300,000,
workers gone.
Yeah.
And more than a million federal workers have lost their right to collectively bargain. Now, this has gone back and forth in the courts, and I think currently those bargaining rights have been restored for like half of them, but it's all still on appeal. And they went back to the federal shutdown, right?
Sorry to interrupt, but we haven't cut spending, right? Like the federal,
correct.
The federal deficit has grown by cutting these 300,000 jobs. Okay, just want to be clear.
I mean,
yes.
You know, the government's not, we should run it like a business. The government is not a business. The government is a service.
Right.
So like, what are you going to do? You're going to get rid of the people that take care of the claims for veterans, like healthcare claims? Then there's nobody to do it, and veterans aren't getting their healthcare taken care of. Like these workers perform a vital service of the government. But
but that's what it was sold to us.
You got me all riled up.
Yeah,
now,
it was sold to us as, oh no, we got to cut costs in government. It's like, okay, we'll go.
It has not played out that way.
No.
But back during the government shutdown, you know, the shutdown was being blamed on the administration overwhelmingly, and there were some unions that said, hey, our folks are at food banks, our folks don't, you know, like, and they're going to get rid of all these people at TSA, and they're going to start shutting down flights. So these unions were just kind of like, all right, let's find a path to open up the government again. And I mean, we talked about it in the show. I thought, like, why are we giving cover to reopen the government, and why are unions sort of conceding here? It doesn't seem like this is a place where, like, we're in the wrong. Like, everybody wants the government to open up, but the reality is there's one party that could make that happen.
Right.
And so we weren't alone in that thinking, because there is a whole rank and file movement of federal workers at this point. And this is what the New York Times was reporting on, where these workers are basically saying, like, our unions are not being very tough right now. Like, we have a knife to our throats, a gun to our heads. We're losing hundreds of thousands of members, and everyone's rights are being taken away. And we're worried about, you know, the dynamics inside of a shutdown. But what we have to be worried about is, like, the existence of the federal labor movement, the American labor movement. And this group of folks, the organization is called Federal Unionist Network, which I love because the acronym is fun. They're not out here talking about having
fun. No, they're not out here to have fun, no.
They're heavily critical. And I think one of the things that they're heavily critical toward the American Federation of Government Employees, the largest government union, and they're just like, we haven't organized properly for a generation,
right, because they had, what, like a third of the federal employees were actually paying members? Yeah.
And so they're just saying, like, we haven't been doing this right, and we have to get a little bit more militant, and, you know, we've got to be in a place where if the federal law says you can't strike, like, if they're going to violate the law,
they're
going to
rip
away
up our
rights,
bargaining contracts, right?
Let's us be ready for it.
Yeah.
And one of the responses that came from Elizabeth Schuler, the president of the AFL-CIO, was, we're not there yet. Polling of our members say we're not ready for a general strike. And we're doing a lot of behind-the-scenes work to communicate and get people ready for, you know, the day that maybe we have to take, like, a one-day strike, in certain industries or in certain parts of the country. And I got to say, like, I read this and it's just like, no wonder nobody's afraid of, you know, the mighty AFL-CIO. Like, yeah. this is the approach we're taking. Like, no, we're not ready to get serious yet. And we don't want to upset anybody, but we're communicating. And then maybe one day we'll do a one day thing or something like that. It just sounds, I mean, I have to think that the leaders of the labor movement from 100 years ago would be just appalled to see this kind of, they're cutting a pound of flesh.
Tepid response, yeah.
Every couple months they're taking a chunk of flesh out of the American labor movement.
Yeah.
And what is the labor movement doing in response as a whole? Not much. But this group of federal workers, fun. I like it. I think
interesting.
They're holding
like,
unions accountable.
How many are we talking in fun? Is it growing or?
They didn't give a number.
Okay.
But it was basically, they talked through, one of the founders was a Department of Veteran Affairs nurse.
Okay.
And, you know, he just said, we have to get more serious because we provide important services. We provide taxpayers and veterans and injured people with what they need every day to stay healthy. And we're being cast aside. We're being fired. We're being tormented.
Yeah.
So we've got to start.
We're being vilified for some reason.
Yeah. Like, let's fight fire with fire, or at least, you know, meet these people on the field with the rules that they're playing by.
Yeah.
And I think it's a message that's it's well placed in the times that we're in right now, because certainly the people that are against workers and against collective bargaining and against unions are taking a really hard approach toward workers, and you've got to meet them where they're at. So this whole thing, if you get a chance, look it up. It's in, it was in New York Times Magazine. It was from last Sunday, but Federal Unionist Network. And they're just out there saying, like, hey, to our federal unions and to the AFL-CIO, do a better job. Like, let's get tough. Let's get serious.
Let's roll our sleeves up.
Yeah. If we keep fighting the way we're fighting, there's not going to be anything left.
Yes.
You know, when this era is over, this administration is passed, will there still be an American labor movement? Will there be federal unions? Yeah. But will they be a shadow of their former selves? Like, we've got to stop that from happening, because that's the direction that it feels like it's pointed right now.
Yeah. And my philosophy remains, the government should not be in the business, especially a government as healthy and well-funded as ours, cutting its own employees' jobs. It was especially middle-class jobs. Like, we're going to need every one of those we can get in the future with everything that's coming. And I just can't understand the logic behind that and why people would cheer for people who work for the VA, people who work for national parks, people who work for any, you know, federal agency. Like, oh yeah, let's cut their jobs. Let's do it. Let's put them on unemployment. let's watch the downstream effects that that has on local economies, on their families, on the, you know, the nation as a whole. I can't get behind that.
Well, when you like, when you take federal, you know, or national park workers, and you get rid of them all, who's doing that work now?
Exactly.
Who's cleaning the park? Who's opening the park? Who's making sure that the animals are like healthy and like
tourism is way down?
Nobody's doing it.
Yeah.
The government does jobs that there's nobody else to do these jobs. Like, they're the last line of defense. They're the people that do this.
Yeah.
And if you get rid of them, like, you've got national parks that are, you know, not open or not clean or not safe. You have hospitals filled with veterans that can't get approval for care because there's nobody to stamp the form or make the phone call or whatever. So, we've seen so many vital, important jobs that mean a lot to American citizens lost, and there has been a whimper from the public about this.
I know.
And so I think that this movement, I like it. The spirit of it, I think, is right on. You know, if Ken was here, I think he'd be banging on the counter this morning saying, absolutely, let's get serious. Let's get a little bit more militant, get back to the roots where, you know, we were able to fight back effectively. So it was a cool story, and, you know, I'm rooting for you. Fun. You're putting the fun back in the American labor movement.
Let's go.
So we've got to take a quick break, but we will be right back with more Workers' Mike right after this.
You're listening to the Workers' Mike, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Kind of rounding out the show here. There's a lot going on this week.
It's kind of a salacious episode.
It was. Mm-hmm. We talked briefly about the the one bad apple theory about when, you know, like the NFLPA union, they're spending dues money out at strip clubs, you know, and just doing the wrong things. We made a little joke that I think we got to get into a little about Department of Labor Secretary Lori Chavez de Remer.
Yes.
Because she is in some hot water right now over allegations.
A little bit.
I mean, what are the allegations here?
She came in, just for some context, so she came in at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. She was Republican from Oregon.
Oregon,
Portland area, I believe.
Supporter of the PRO Act as a
congressman. Big supporter of the PRO Act. Like, you know, a lot of the unions were like, this is a slam dunk.
Solid
great.
Pick.
We got someone who backs us in collective bargaining, and we like it. And then, you know, as want to happen, she came into office and kind of just...
Caved.
Yeah, caved right away, folded, and didn't really have our backs, and certainly wasn't a vocal opponent of what was going on with our previous discussion topic of federal employee collective bargaining contracts
getting ripped up. The best thing you could really say about her, that I've been able to say about her, is could have been worse.
You know what I mean? Right. But
it's a glowing endorsement.
To go along with our theme of the...
one bad apple.
Yes, and, you know, unseemly things happening in labor. She's now... is there an investigation? But
yes.
There's been allegations that she's been, what?
She drinks at her desk during the day.
Drinks at the job, yes, and is having some...
She's got an extramarital, let's call him a special friend.
Yes.
Who apparently has been...
Also works for her.
Flown around, you know, to her office and to her hotels and stuff. And then a whole bunch of her staff members have said that they've had to make up travel, official travel, so that she can fly around to see her friends and stuff. So again, these are allegations. But it sounds like she's, you know, making the best of
not good.
Making the best of her time in office.
Just not exactly setting a shining example as the head of the Labor Department.
Well, one of her goals and what she's sort of undertaking, because a lot of times she's not around, and it's because she has a goal to get to all 50 states. And I assumed it was because she wanted to meet all the workers from every 50 states, but maybe she's just like collecting keychains or trying to go to a brewery in every state.
Getting a shot glass. Yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure what's going on there, but the allegations were a little bit troubling, and it sounds like the drinking in her office, they were saying that happens like every day.
Yes.
Now maybe working in this administration is just that hard.
Yeah.
Or she's been forced to make personal compromises that are just that difficult to make.
Yeah, it could be a hazard of the job. But she's pledged fealty to the president, so who knows? Maybe he'll keep her around, but I don't know.
Yeah, That was interesting. Certainly interesting allegations.
Yes,
but we wanted to get into that so that my previous glug 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 when he mentioned her name,
thank you,
would make sense to everyone.
Yes.
So allegedly glug glug. It was allegedly. Alleged glug.
Allegedly.
But yeah, that's about all the time we have for this week. But before we go, wanted to recognize a listener of the week. And that listener is Alex Tetzlaff from the Operating Engineers Local 420 up in Wisconsin. Super faithful listener. I bumped into him this week, and you know, he had just nothing but the nicest things to say, among many other, you know, officials and members and staff members. We just heard the nicest things. But to everybody who makes a habit of listening to the show every week.
Yeah, shout out Alex.
We really appreciate you.
Send us your emails.
Absolutely. We would love to hear more from listeners. We get emails, but we would always love more. And if you have a topic you'd like us to cover on the show or something going on in your union that you'd like us to cover, please send us an email, and you can send that to...
WorkersMike at WGNRadio.com.
Yeah, I think it's theWorkersMike at WGNRadio.com. So please send us an email, and we will be glad to read it out or talk about whatever it is that you've got that is on your mind. So thanks again, everybody. Thank you, Phil, for a fantastic show.
It was a pleasure.
And your beard is looking extra good this
Thank
week,
you.
But I'll get into that more off the air.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
The preceding episode of The Worker's Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Worker's Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.